attack you and try to destroy your life, there's a special pain in that.
You know, following the controversy around Dark Alliance, the San Jose Mercury News transferred Gary Webb from the paper's Sacramento office to a suburban office in Cupertino. In December 97, Webb resigned. I got a chance to speak to him on Democracy Now! About his resignation.
Hi, Amy. How are you doing?
Good. Well, the more important question is, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm alive. I'm here, you know. Well, and not working for that newspaper anymore, thank God.
Well, tell us exactly what happened.
Well, what happened was, you know, like you said, they transferred me out to the boondocks, and I went on a byline strike, and I wouldn't allow my name to be used on any stories while I was out there. And, you know, that made everybody even madder. And then, I finally had to sit down and figure out, this year and a half now since the series came out, and, what am I doing with my life, and what am I doing with my work that's meaningful, and I had to answer that, you know, nothing was happening. It was clear to me that the Mercury, they had told me that, you know, even when we won the arbitration, that they weren't going to let me do anything worthwhile, and were not going to let me do any investigative reporting. So I had to figure, you know, this is kind of pointless to hang around and work for a newspaper whose, editors you didn't respect and do dog bite stories for the rest of my life. It just didn't seem worthwhile.
That was Gary Webb speaking on Democracy Now! In December 1997. He would ultimately commit suicide. You can go to our website to see all of our interviews with Gary at democracynow.org. Bob Perry, your final comments about the significance of the story that he broke.
Well, there's no question that this is one of the most important stories of the 1980s and really the 1990s when you get to the end of this and the CIA confessing. But it's also a story about the failure of the mainstream press that extends to the present, goes through the Iraq War, the failure to be skeptical there, and goes right on to the present day. So it's not an old story. It's a very much a current story.
Robert Perry, thank you so much for being with us. Veteran investigative journalist. Again, our website with Gary Webb at democracynow.org. I'll be speaking tonight at the University of Michigan Flint at 6 o'clock. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkman, Nafel Saramate, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkapani, Masood Rabi, Karen Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Che.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Next up is the evening news.
Join us for our monthly movie event, KBOO at the Clinton. This month, on October 9th, KBOO will host a screening of The U.S. vs. John Lennon, a 2006 documentary film about John Lennon and his transformation from Beatle to anti-war activist and the repression he faced because of his political activities. That's KBOO at the Clinton with The U.S. vs. John Lennon on Thursday, October 9th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good people! On Thursday the 9th of October at 8 p.m., we at Guesses Coming to Radio will be doing our first membership drive special since our hiatus in honor of none other than Herbie Hancock. Herbie has transcended musical genres for over 50 years by meshing funk, hip-hop, electronic dance, classical, and more with a spiritual and traditional jazz sensibility. We will be exploring so many of these different eras, so stay tuned for our tribute to Herbie Hancock and Community Radio, Thursday the 9th of October at 8 p.m. on KBOO, your community radio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House. and by the League of Women Voters of Portland, helping to make democracy work with election forms for the November election. Forms on October 14th and 15th will present local and state ballot measures, including marijuana legalization, GMO labeling, and driver's cards. Information at lwvpdx.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News, three local environmental groups have become party to Amber Energy's appeal to overturn the state's denial of their permit to build a coal terminal in Boardman, Oregon.
The Climate Action Coalition held a protest at ARC Logistics right here in Northwest Portland this afternoon to protest the expansion of oil by rail here in Oregon.
KABU speaks with Francisco Aguirre, the El Salvadorian immigrant activist for day laborers who is seeking legal sanctuary from deportation in a Portland church.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Thursday, October 9th of 2014. KABU is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266.
Today, three Oregon environmental groups fielded file papers, to become party to an appeals case brought by the Australian company Amber Energy against the Oregon Department of State Lands, or DSL. Amber hopes to force the state to overturn the DSL's denial of a permit that would allow Amber to build a coal terminal at the Port of Morrow in Boardman, Oregon, where coal brought by train would be loaded onto barges for shipment down the Columbia River. As the most straightforward route through the Cascade Mountains to the Pacific, the Columbia Gorge has been the target of numerous proposals for oil, coal, and gas terminals, hoping to cash in on the growing Asian market for North American fossil fuels. One of the organizations opposing the appeal is the Columbia Riverkeeper. For more on the story, KABU's Sam Bowman spoke with Lauren Goldberg, staff attorney for the Columbia Riverkeeper.
Can you give us a little background about the recent flurry of appeals over the Department of State Lands decision regarding the Morrow coal terminal in Boardman?
So Amber Energy proposes bringing coal through Oregon. It would be a significant project with ramifications for public health, Columbia River, and Columbia River Treaty Tribes as well. And this project has attracted unprecedented opposition from across the Northwest. And back on August 18th, the Oregon Department of State Lands denied a key permit for Amber to build its coal dock at the Port of Morrow in Boardman, Oregon. Shortly thereafter, Amber Energy, the Port of Morrow, and the state of Wyoming all filed appeals, administrative level appeals, with the Department of State Lands. And today, three conservation groups, Columbia Riverkeeper, Friends of the Gorge, and Sierra Club, filed paperwork so that we can be a party in that appeal, so that the public's voice, you know, people that are concerned about fishing in the Columbia River, clean water, public health, can all be heard in that administrative appeal process.
Can you explain some of the specific hazards and harms that are associated with Amber's original proposal?
It's hard to know where to start. The proposal from, you know, the moment it begins is about extracting coal from the ground, moving it on mile-and-a-half-long trains, and we're talking about uncovered trains where we know that coal dust and chunks of coal will be flying out of those trains, and we know because of where the tracks are that coal is going to be going right into rivers, including the Columbia River. Now, at the Port of Morrow itself, Amber wants to build a brand new dock, and that dock would significantly increase barge traffic on the Columbia River. So you're talking about doubling the amount of barge traffic on the river, and this is a river where there's already a lot of user conflicts between people that are out there fishing, you know, swimming, windsurfing. So there are a lot of people that are already using the river and concerned about how all of this coal barge traffic is going to impact their use of the river. Now, once the coal is loaded onto barges, it's going to travel over 200 miles downstream on the Columbia River to the Columbia River estuary. And the place where Amber wants to move the coal from barges onto ocean-going vessels is some of the highest quality salmon habitat in the entire Columbia Basin. So we're talking about a proposal that from its very start to its end, let alone the end use, which is burning coal, has huge ramifications for, you know, people throughout the Northwest.
Some of the observers might say that stopping this terminal would just shunt the coal exports and transport elsewhere in Oregon or in the Northwest.
Well, we've asked experts to look at that question because that's a key concern of ours as well. I mean, we're pouring tremendous amount of resources. Our members are going to hearings. You know, they're meeting with their local elected officials, sharing their concerns. You know, is it really worth it? And when we've talked to experts that are looking at the economics of coal export, what they're telling us is that absolutely, if you stop these terminals on the Columbia, it's going to have a huge impact because the Northwest, they're really, when you look at it on a map, and we've spent a lot of time looking at this question, there really are a limited number of places where we can move coal. There are places where coal can be exported, and a lot of those ports have already said no. Because the public, you know, these are public ports, the public does not want these in their backyard. And so we think that it's really critical to stop the terminals here in Oregon and Washington, and that it will have, you know, regional ramifications, and that when we say no to one terminal, it sends a strong message to other parts of the region not to even begin the process of considering these dirty coal projects.
You described the Department of State Lands permit denial from August 18th as landmark. Does that mean that it indicates a break with previous state land policies?
In general, state agencies, be it in Oregon, Washington, other parts of the country, typically when permits are proposed, they're approved. You know, sometimes there are some modifications done to reduce impacts, but generally, you know, business as usual, if you ask anyone at a state agency, is approving permits. And so what was unusual here is that the state took a very long time. They spent a tremendous amount of resources looking at thousands of pages of evidence, expert reports, testimony, and concluded that this permit was not in the best interest of Oregonians, was not in the best interest of the Columbia River, and they denied it. And it was an important step for the state, for DSL, and that they looked at all the evidence and they came to the right conclusion. And so our role now as, you know, the conservation community is to stand with the state in defending what really is a landmark decision.
For KBOO Evening News, this is Sam Bowman speaking with Lauren Goldberg, staff attorney with the Columbia Riverkeeper.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Sam and Teresa to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Good evening. Thank you, Robert. My name is Sam, and I'm joined here with Teresa, or by Teresa. And we are here to invite you to take this opportunity to become fully engaged financial supporters, part owners, if you will, of KBOO Community Radio. That's right. I want you to make an investment right now when you call 877-500-5266. And I guess we can call them our brokers, how the amount to, that you wish to invest in a strong and secure, fierce and vibrant electronic media outlet that is focused entirely on bringing you what you want and need. The information, the news, the analysis, the arts, culture, and entertainment programming on which you have come to rely to be a fully rounded and engaged citizen of your community. Make that call right now, 877-500-5266.
You know, when I'm talking to you, I know that I'm talking to the sort of person who is there for your neighbor when they're moving out and doesn't really have to be asked. As soon as your neighbor's moving out, you know that you're going to be there to help move the furniture and to hold their hand while they deal with the process. That's because you understand that you're part of community. This is community radio. So that's the sort of person that you are, and that's the sort of person that that is the 10% of listeners who support KBOO. We need you to call right now, and you'll be joining Carolyn of Aloha, which we mentioned last time around. And you'll be calling 877-552-66, 877-552-66. Now, to support KBOO Portland, all you really have to do is wish us well. But that and $20 will get you an absolutely wonderful hoodie, a black hoodie that has a very militant-looking design on it, a transmitter with a red star behind it, lightning bolts coming out, KBOO on it. You will enjoy having this hoodie, and you will probably be impervious to tear gas in it, right, Sam?
Perhaps. Why not try it out? Get your hoodie right now. You call 877-500-5266. We're offering this hoodie to folks whose radio bill is $20 each month, so you can have that set up right now to have your credit card charged once a month, to have that $20 deducted automatically from your checking account. However you wish to do it, the important thing is that you do it, and you do it right now. 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to Robert and Aaron to tell you more about what's happening right here in your community. So make that call.
The Climate Action Coalition held a protest at ARC Logistics today in support of the opposition to oil trains. Portland Rising Tide, 350 Portland, and NoKXL, the Unitarian Universalist Church, and other groups, as well as over 100 people, were at today's protest. Organizers said the goal of the action was to send a strong message that the community will not allow dangerous oil trains to come through Portland. A recent report from the Department of Transportation said 3 oil trains per week roll through Oregon, oftentimes with no indication of the contents. This often leads state response agencies unable to determine how they might have to respond should there be an incident. According to the Climate Action Coalition, 5 activists risked arrest by sitting directly on the rail tracks to prevent an oil train from reaching the oil terminal. Information leaked from a worker at the facility revealed that due to the controversial protest, oil shipments have been halted for the day. Protesters, including those blocking the tracks, have since dispersed peacefully. ARC Logistics currently ships crude oil by rail from Fracked Oil Shale in Utah. The first U.S. tar sands mine is under construction in Utah, and ARC could soon be attempting this controversial fuel. The ARC Logistics Terminal can also receive explosive Bracken crude oil from the North Dakota without notifying Portland residents. One of the 5 protesters risking arrest, Kelly O'Hanley, explained her reasoning.
Well, it's been the accumulation of everything I'm hearing about and been learning about climate change. And I feel like we're at a crossroads. We need to either stop the direction we're going or continue toward basically climate disaster. So I'm an obstetrician gynecologist. I have a background in public health, and I've spent my life trying to protect mothers and babies and worked in maybe 40 different countries. I've helped teach at Harvard and Stanford, but this dwarfs any of those efforts and any of those effects for health. So this is the single most important thing I can be doing.
The protesters dispersed peacefully this afternoon after causing the disruption of oil train arrivals for the day.
Oregon's case against the designers of the faulty Cover Oregon website has accrued a cost of over $1 million so far. The state is suing Oracle America for crimes including fraud and racketeering. The parties are still in the first stage of the suit, deciding whether to hear it in state or federal court, which means that these expenses are just the beginning. Prior to its launch, the state spent $160 million on Cover Oregon, and no one was able to enroll for health care through it, even when it was released and it eventually closed. If Oregon does win the case, it'll have to share the settlement with the federal government. And Oracle has issued its own countersuit against the state of Oregon, saying that Oregon has mismanaged the project.
Francisco Aguirre, an El Salvadorian immigrant who has lived in the Portland area for 20 years, working as a day laborer and helping to found the organization VOS, or Voice. VOS is an educational and advocacy group for day laborers. Recently, Aguirre was targeted by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and faces deportation due to his status as an undocumented immigrant. He has taken sanctuary in Augustana Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland. The sanctuary movement began in the 1980s and involves many Christian denominations providing support, including material aid and legal advice, to Central American immigrants facing deportation from the United States. KBOO reporter Jamie Partridge spoke to Francisco Aguirre at Augustana Lutheran Church this morning.
So you're here in the church, in sanctuary, from the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agents, the ICE, who came to your home to try to arrest and possibly deport you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's the reason why I end up in this church after the Friday the 19th of the last month. When I show up at my house trying to take me into custody with no warrant at all. So I just enforce my right, and the community get organized and start making phone calls. And Pastor Mark from Augustana Lutheran Church was the one who answered the call. And he didn't think twice to say, yes, bring Francisco to the church.
Why is it why is this happening now? You're not the only one that ICE is going after. In fact, about 1,000 people a day are being deported by our current administration in Washington. In fact, folks call Obama the deporter in chief. What is happening now with deportations?
Well, you know, this church, Augustana Church, since 1996, it's been pretty active in the Centurion movement. And they declared themselves as a Centurion movement in 1996. And I'm the first guest in the, at the church, you know. There is a big issue now going on, you know, in U.S. A lot of people getting deported without giving the opportunity to defend themselves. A lot of people who qualify to stay in this country that Mr. Obama is the troublemaker now, you know. It's the big issue for us because it's not doing anything about it. It's just lying to the community.
So you had to come to this country from El Salvador because your life was in danger. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's the reason why I come to this country. My life was in danger because I was involved in the political issues back in El Salvador. And since that, I was being persecuted by the government, the right, you know, wins. Government. Even now that FMLN is in charge, I'm afraid to go, not because the government is looking for me now, but there is still a danger for me to go back. You know, there is people who still take it personal, and it just want to hurt you. But now there is another big issue, gangs, you know, it's all over in the country and they are out of control. And if you go there, just because you coming from U.S., they believe that you have something that they can get from you. And either you die because you have something and you want to protect it, or you die because you don't have nothing that you can give to them, you know. So that's a big issue for us, you know, like me personally in my case, you know.
Here you are, a person who's been here for many years. How many years?
I've been here for almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years. And in that time, you've worked as a day laborer, jornalero, yeah? And you've been one of the founding members of VOS, the Day Laborer, the Workers' Rights Education Center, there on Martin Luther King Boulevard. Tell us about your work at VOS.
Yes. Well, when I first got to live in Oregon, I started working as a day laborer on weekends. And during the week, my job was being an organizer. Organizing day laborers, learning about rights and teaching about rights. When we work hard on become boss, I become a staff, you know. That was in 2008 when I started being staff for boss. And my job in there, it's I'm the coordinator and I'm in charge of marketing. What I do is I promote the place. I build, you know, networks to bring more work to that worker center, you know.
So there's an event in support of you and in to stop deportations at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement office tomorrow at 10, Friday morning. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's an action that we've been preparing, and Friday, tomorrow, will be the date. We want to let ICE know that the community is organized and ready to fight, that we won't let them scaring our community, separating families. They are all over, you know, just broken or rights every minute that they detain someone. They need to use or act as according to the law, because they're breaking the law by the way they are showing up at houses with no warrant, lying to people so they can go out and being detained. We need to stop that, you know. And the community need to be aware of what to do in case I show up at their place. We have to be organized and fight this issue.
That was KBOO's Jamie Partridge speaking with Francisco Aguirre, a day laborer activist facing deportation who is currently taking sanctuary in Northeast Portland's Augustana Lutheran Church.
Last night, a St. Louis, Missouri police officer shot and killed an unarmed African-American teenager. An off-duty police officer was doing side work for a private security firm when he began pursuing Vonderit Myers Jr. and two other young men who he thought were acting suspiciously. The officer says that one of the teens began shooting at him and he returned fire. Myers' family members say that he was holding a sandwich. He was 18 years old. Protests began in the Shaw neighborhood of St. Louis last night, denouncing the entire police force and smashing windows on several police vehicles. Myers' death comes 2 months after the shooting of Michael Brown by police in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson. Unlike the protests that followed Brown's killing, last night's demonstrations met with almost no confrontation from the police, who were criticized nationwide for their crackdown on the Ferguson protests.
On Monday, a Portland man won his civil case against the Portland Police Bureau. Jason Cox, an iron worker, was suing the department for police brutality over an incident that happened in 2011. Police stopped Cox in a southeast Portland parking lot for drunk driving, hitting him multiple times and shocking him with a taser. The injuries left Cox unable to work. Police said that he was resisting arrest and that they stopped hitting him when he stopped fighting. Security cameras in the parking lot, however, showed that Cox never attacked the police and that they continued to assault him while he lay on the ground. Cox has been awarded almost $600,000. This is the largest amount of money that has ever been awarded for a brutality case against a Portland police officer.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or to become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio at 6 o'clock. And at 7, it'll be Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be clear, mostly sunny with a high of about 74 degrees, a low around 57.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this news coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us are Sam and Teresa to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Jackie. This is your opportunity, dear listener, to become a part of this ongoing experiment. KBOO's been broadcasting pretty much virtually nonstop since 1968, and we want to keep going, and that can happen. I know you would like that, too. That's why you keep tuning in all the time. That's why you're every time you tune to 90.7 FM in the Portland Metro, or 104.3 around Corvallis and Philomath, or 91.9 up in the Hood River and up and down the Gorge, you expect to hear KABU, and that's been happening so far because people have been stepping up. They call 877-500-5266, and now it is your turn. You were a member before. Well, once isn't enough. You got to keep doing it. Unless, hey, there we go. Thank you for that call. That person is calling 877-500-5266. When you make that one-time pledge of support and you mail in your check or you have your credit card charged, that's good for a year, and you got to call back. So the folks who called last year, it's time. 877-500-5266. For those of you who are doing the monthly thing, you're good. But still, call 877-500-5266. Say hi. Get a new thank you gift for this year. Yes, you can do that. 877-500-5266. You can use the safe, convenient, easy, and secure web form that you can find at kboo.fm. How you do it and at whatever level is secondary, though, to the fact that you have done it, that you have stepped up, that you have gotten involved, because that's what community radio is all about. That's what community is all about. You get involved. There's stuff that needs to be done, and you step up to do it. 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Sam. I'm Teresa Mitchell, a trans behind the mic, and I'm here with Sam, the Deeds of the Righteous Shall Never Perish. And you are listening to KBOO News because the news matters to you. This is news about your life. This is news about deportation raids. This is news about coal barges, bomb trains, things that are happening right here, right now. I have a suggestion for you because we have a hoodie for you, and here's how you're going to get it. Cancel your cable. Come on, you're already paying for Wi-Fi. You've started downloading exactly what shows you want and when. Why are you paying the cable company? Why? Knock off $40 from your bill and give us $20 of it, and that will get you a delicious black hoodie. A hoodie with a hood, and this hood is from the KABU hood, and it has a transmitter logo on it that is just, well, it's just righteous, right, Sam?
However delicious this hoodie is, I suggest you wear it.
Well, sure, you could chew it a little bit if you wanted to, but you can get it
nibble
for
on the
by
sleeve.
Calling us 877-500-5266 and setting up a painless $20 a month donation, and that's half as painful as your $40 a month that you're paying for the cable
or
right
twice
now,
as painless.
That's right, which you aren't using. Call us 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. Now, if you have not joined the 10% of people who listen to KBOO who are supporters, then it's time to get your feet wet. And really, it's just about procrastination, isn't it? Because you can afford $5 a month, and we can afford to give you a book for that, a copy of Amy Goodman's book, The Silenced Majority. $5 a month, that's you right now. 3 minutes, 877-500-5266. What's that number, Sam?
It's 877-500-5266. And I know there's some news junkies out here. You pay attention to the newscast here on KBOO. You want to hear some more of that news and public affairs stuff. How about, why don't you get ahead of the game and put down $6.25 a month, and we'll send you a 4 gigabyte flash drive jam-packed with lectures and interviews and speeches given throughout the entire history of KABU and beyond. We've partnered up with the Pacifica Archives going all the way back to 1949 at least, and you can have this thing here. And
I just can't believe they can cram so much in such a little bitty thing. It's like, if you shook it, could you hear things like, the people united shall never be defeated?
Well, why not call 877-500-5266 with your promise of $75 over the course of a year, whether you pay that all at once or have at $6.25 a month. We'll send you your very own little 4 gigabyte little thumb drive, and you can shake it for all for yourself and listen to it shake and see what happens. And then why not plug it into your computer and play the audio files contained therein? How about some audio right now from our friends Robert and Jackie telling us more about what's going on right in your neighborhood and across the country? 877-500-5266. Thank you for that call. Now it's your turn. Do it now.
Well, it's 34 minutes after 5 o'clock and time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Tenacity can be a virtue, but the persistent push by giant food conglomerates to deceive us consumers has turned their tenacity into raw mendacity. Brand-name food peddlers are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbyists, lawyers, campaign donations, PR hypesters, and political manipulators so they can genetically and dangerously alter the dinner we put on our family tables without bothering to tell us which items they've messed with. With practically no public notice, their first deception was to get Washington to okay the production and introduction of genetically modified organisms into corn, canola, soy, and other crops. Then, they quietly pushed to prevent federal regulators from requiring that these tampered Frankenfoods be labeled as containing GMOs. Next, they tried a grand deception, insisting that foods tainted with GMOs qualify for the national organic label. Even our usually submissive regulators balked at that one. But look out, for here they come again. Big Foods Industry Front Group, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, is now demanding that foods with genetically engineered ingredients be allowed to use the word natural on their packages. Natural? Let's see. One, these biotech mutations are not products of nature, but of corporate technicians. And two, the plants are manufactured in corporate labs by extracting genes from a foreign plant or even an animal, then splicing those genes into the manufactured creature. The very DNA of this man-made food is altered, with no understanding of the long-term environmental or health consequences. This is Jim Hightower saying, a Twinkie is more natural than that. They're perverting both our language and nature's reality. To oppose these profiteers' tenacious mendaciousness, contact the Environmental Working Group. That's at www.ewg.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out at hightowerlowdown.org.
The Supreme Court today allowed North Carolina to cut back voting access in a 5-4 decision. The decision was issued in an unsigned single-paragraph decision that failed to explain its reasoning and did not indicate the five justices who vote for it. A dissent was written by Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, who said that the decision would not have been possible without last year's decision in the case Shelby County versus Holder, which struck down important provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Those provisions had made it necessary for states to get permission from the federal government to change voting laws. One day after the Shelby County decision, North Carolina passed a law ending same-day voter registration and out-of-precinct voting, both used more often by black voters than white. An appeals court ruling had overturned that law, but today's Supreme Court ruling effectively reinstates that. It follows a recent 5-4 decision upholding similar restrictions in Ohio, and another decision on Wisconsin's restriction on early voting is expected soon. Opponents of the decision point out that North Carolina's House Speaker Tom Tillis is up for re-election against a candidate with far more support from the black voters than Tillis, and claim that the law is meant to disenfranchise voters who don't support the Republican Party. Tillis said that the law was intended only to restore public confidence in elections. The North Carolina deadline for voter registration is tomorrow, October 10th. While the controversial voter restrictions are going to be fully enforced, according to the North Carolina Elections Board, the law may still be overturned. Since a suit challenging its constitutionality is still pending.
In the latest development for gay marriage in the United States, the governor and attorney general of West Virginia announced that they will no longer defend their state's gay marriage ban. The West Virginia ban was struck down by a district court back in July, and the state government has been fighting that ruling until today. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin and Attorney General Patrick Morrissey made that decision after the U.S. Supreme Court denied appeals on Monday from five states seeking to uphold their gay marriage bans. This was after they were overturned by lower courts. Those states, Indiana, Utah, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Wisconsin began marrying gay couples within hours of the decision. Another appeals court decision on Tuesday struck down bans in Nevada and Idaho. However, Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy put the order on hold for Idaho after an emergency request for a stay. That stay will likely be lifted soon. After other state bans are tested in appeals courts in the wake of Monday's Supreme Court decision, gay marriage may be legal in as many as 35 states. An estimated 2/3 of the gay couples in the United States would then be able to get married.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Thursday, October 9th, 2014. Settlers uproot olive trees belonging to Palestinian farmers in the West Bank, and Israeli troops open fire at Palestinian farmers near the borders of the Gaza Strip. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A number of extremist Israeli settlers invaded Palestinian orchards near the West Bank city of Bethlehem before cutting and uprooting dozens of olive trees. Hassan Brejia, coordinator of the Popular Committee Against the Wall and Settlements in the Bethlehem district, stated that settlers came from Bitar Elite illegal settlement built on Palestinian lands belonging to residents of Nahalin and Hussan and Wadi Fukin and uprooted around 38 olive trees and harvested them. The settlers also cut around 200 olive trees belonging to Muhammad Atiya Shusha in Ibtat, nearby area next to the settlements. Brejia said that Israeli soldiers and settlers have escalated their attacks against Palestinian orchards west of Bethlehem by illegally occupying orchards, uprooting trees and burning them, especially in orchards that became surrounded by the Bitar Elite settlement and close to it. In other news, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, said that Israeli soldiers kidnapped two Palestinians, including a child, in occupied East Jerusalem and moved them to an interrogation facility in the city. Also on Thursday, the Israeli soldiers kidnapped a Palestinian man at a roadblock near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. The army also closed two main roadblocks near the northern West Bank city of Nablus on Thursday. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli soldiers stationed across the border fence with the coastal enclave opened fire on Thursday morning at several Palestinian farmers working in their lands east of Khan Yunis in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. Local sources said that soldiers stationed at a military tower in Kusufi military base across the border fence opened fire targeting farmers in the Santani area east of Abasan al-Kubra and al-Karara east of Khan Yunis. The sources added that the attack started around 6:30 in the morning and also targeted homes which civilians had to leave during the Israeli aggression on Gaza last month. Damage was reported but no injuries.
Like the rest of the United States, Oregon is becoming more racially diverse. However, new research about how that trend is affecting kids and families says that there simply aren't as many opportunities for non-whites as there are for whites across the state of Oregon. Those disparities are the focus of the new 2014 Oregon County Data Book, released on Wednesday. KBOO's Sam Bowman has more on this in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
Oregon's quality of life is different depending on the color of a child's skin. That's the conclusion of a report on the opportunities for children growing up here. In every county, Children First for Oregon says children of color don't have the same chances for success as their white counterparts. And since 1/3 of Oregon kids identify as non-white, the report says the state has some work to do to catch up with the trend. Tanya Hunt, who heads Children First, says Oregon's future depends on it.
When we don't see early childhood educational opportunities, and then we don't see strong elementary school success, and we don't see good high school graduation, those are our next parents living in poverty and raising their children in poverty. So we've got to be interrupting the cycle.
The report covers 12 measures it calls, quote, indicators of opportunity, from reading and math proficiency at certain grade levels to living above the poverty level and with parents who have finished high school. It says 60% of children of color live in low-income families in Oregon, compared to 38% of white children. Hunt says in rural Oregon, services are scarce, and transportation and lack of living wage jobs are challenges. But she adds, even in urban areas with concentrations of minority families, the research found there aren't enough culturally specific programs or services to meet the needs, nor has there been enough funding to change that.
Many of our populations of children in specific regions and certain cultural populations, we've actually fallen below mediocrity, and we're seeing kids really struggling and families struggling to not even get ahead, but just simply to survive.
Hunt explains that the point of the report isn't to insist that every child get equal treatment in every way, but that's more focus to be placed on the disparities that make it more difficult for non-white children to succeed in school and in life. For KBOO Evening News, in collaboration with the Oregon News Service, this is Sam Bowman.
Now is your chance to support the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Sam and Teresa to talk to you about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Teresa.
There's a number to call. It's 877-500-5266. 877-500-KBOO. That's 877, toll-free, 500-5266. You can call it. You can spend 3 minutes on the phone and talk to our phone answerers, who will ask a few questions of you, send you a letter, and take your $5 a month for those
right
of you
here,
getting
$5 a month,
your feet wet, and come on, $5 a month. That's just 2 bus tickets, or we have pledge premiums we'd love to give you for $6.25. That's just 2 bus tickets and a Snickers bar. You can do it. 877-500-5266. Now at the $5 per month level, we'd love to give you a copy of the Silenced Majority by Amy Goodman, providing a vivid record of events, conflicts, and social movements shaping our society today. And I could say yada yada, but hey, it's a book by Amy Goodman. You want it, and you can have it for that puny little $5 a month. And for those of you who've got a job that carries you through the month and you don't have to stretch through with Top Ramen, how about getting yourself a hoodie? We have those for only $20 a month of sustaining support, which we can also get through your checking account. And that black hoodie has a lovely logo on it with a KBOO transmitter with a red star behind it and the lightning bolts and other stuff that Sam remembers that I don't. And it just looks like a terrific piece of attitude, and you will enjoy shuffling through the streets with the massive hordes that are already wearing these hoodies with the hood up. A black hoodie could be yours. $20 a month, 877-500-5266. And now is the time for you to call in and join the 10% of people who are responsible enough to support KBOO Community Radio. Right, Sam?
Yes, we really like to hear from the returning and renewing members to help us maintain that ratio. We'd really like to hear from some brand new members to help up that ratio. For now, we're going to go back to a bit more of what's happening right here in town and around the country and around the world. So make that call right now, 877-500-5266.
You've been listening to an hour-long membership special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories right here at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jamie Partridge and Sarika Mehta. The producer is Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Meredith Cox. You can find more national and international stories at fsrn.org. Our engineer holding it all together is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Yinka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jackie Malmstrom. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO, it's News and Public Affairs Day, Fight the Power. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, hosts Ani and Lynn welcome feminist poet, essayist, and critic Katha Pollitt to discuss her new book, Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights. At 9, Teresa Mitchell speaks with Jeffrey Clements, author of Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. At 10, on Air Cascadia, host Chris Andre speaks with Kshama Swant, socialist activist and Seattle City Council member. At 10:30, hear the Smart Aleck Oregon Investigative Reporting Project. In the afternoon, we feature a powerful local panel discussion on Beyond Ferguson, featuring local activists including KBOO co-manager Mike Crenshaw and others. Also, Shamco Noble, hip-hop artist, cultural organizer, and political theorist, and more. Coming up next is KBOO News in Depth, followed by my show, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. My name is Sam Bowman. Rick Steves, the famous travel writer and radio and television personality and longtime host of Oregon Public Broadcasting's Rick Steves Europe, is kicking off a tour of 9 Oregon cities this week. He is speaking in support of Oregon's Measure 91, which would effectively legalize recreational marijuana use in Oregon. Marijuana has already been legalized in Washington and Colorado. Steves spoke with KBOO's Sarika Mehta yesterday about his trip, his views on the legalization of marijuana, and the importance of public radio.
Tell us why you feel so passionately about this issue.
Oh, I think this is so exciting that the United States can finally find a way to get out of the prohibition against marijuana. The people who are working to take the crime out of the equation here, we're not pro-marijuana, it's anti-prohibition, pro-recognition of civil liberties for responsible adults to enjoy marijuana in the privacy of their own home if they feel like it, and a chance to have the law really effectively protect children and young people and the rights of employers to have whatever standards they want in their workplace and safety on our roads. It's just a pragmatic harm reduction approach to a persistent problem, and our current wars against marijuana are just very expensive, very racist, and counterproductive.
In fact, that makes me think that I wondered first if this was, if your interest stemmed from someone you knew who needed relief, pain relief due to illness, or is this due to your passion related to our incarceration system? How did you develop this passion in this issue?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to be involved in drug policy reform, and people who have loved ones who have found great relief using marijuana medicinally have reason to have a personal interest in it that way. I get a lot of thank yous from people in the last 2 years since we've legalized marijuana in Washington thanking me for that. Personally, I'm in it because of the civil liberties, because of fiscal responsibility, because of respect for law enforcement to be able to redirect precious and limited law enforcement resources into violent crimes and not be running down, petty and nonviolent pot-smoking offenses. And because I come from a European perspective, I've spent a third of my adult life living out of a carry-on airplane-sized suitcase in Europe, talking to people who also have challenges in their societies with drug abuse. And they remind me that a society has to make a choice, tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. And they always remind me with an annoying little kicker that Americans lock up 10 times as many people per capita as Europeans do. Either we're inherently more criminal or there's something messed up about our laws. And I don't think we're inherently more criminal. I think we've just got ourselves some very misguided laws here. And just like courageous citizens and leaders worked our country out of the expensive and cost and non-productive prohibition against alcohol back in the 1930s, today, leaders are helping us work our way out of the prohibition of our age, which is the criminalization of marijuana.
Right. That's a good perspective to have on it. So you are doing a 10-city tour in the state of Oregon that is called Travel as a Political Act, Ending Marijuana Prohibition in Oregon, mm-hmm. taking your travel expertise and applying it to this incredibly brave political act. From what I understand, the city of Portland seems to have a lot of support for ballot measure 91. How do you intend to gain support from communities outside of Portland? Because you are going to other small towns. I mean, you're going to Salem. You're also going to Medford and a number of other places.
Well, you know, the main challenge for us is just to get people up to speed on just the context here and the practical reasons that Measure 91 is smart law. You can frame this in a conservative way. You can frame this in a progressive way. For me, it's just common sense. I think that Oregon, arrests or cites 13,000 people a year for marijuana. These aren't rich white guys. These are poor people and people of color has cost the society millions of dollars just immediately in legal expenses and so on. But much more important, it messes up 13,000 people's lives. And these are people who cannot afford this kind of a bump in the road. And then they have a record and they can't get a job or they can't get into school. And that brings real cost to our society later on. I know that law enforcement is a precious and limited resource here, and we're wasting too many law enforcement resources on petty marijuana crimes. I do want to remind Oregonians, when they hear somebody coming from out of state telling them that they should continue locking up pot smokers, you got to ask yourself, what motivates this person? And who paid for his plane ticket into this state? And I would bet that, I know as a matter of fact, that pharmaceutical companies and organizations that profit from the fact that marijuana is illegal are paying for these people to come into the state and promote the status quo. I'm taking a week off of my work up in Seattle, and I'm coming down here on my own penny because I know that Oregonians are smart and caring citizens, and they just need to get somebody to explain to them that it is a wrong-minded prohibition. And I think one thing that a lot of people misunderstand is they just assume use is going to go up when we legalize, tax, and regulate. And our experience is, and every society's experience is, there's no correlation between consumption and how strict the laws are. I firmly believe, and I'll stick by this, that after Oregon legalizes, taxes, and regulates marijuana, use will not go up substantially. It may spike up in the beginning because it'll be kind of curious. Then it'll settle down. My firm belief is that people who want to smoke pot already do. And we can just take the crime out of the equation and treat it as a health challenge and an education challenge when it comes to the abuse of marijuana and a civil liberty for the mature adult use. And I feel this way, because every society that has lightened up on its laws has found that use does not go up. And today, by every country's measure, Americans smoke more per capita than Europeans do, in spite of the fact that you can do hard time for smoking pot in the United States and a joint's about as exciting as a can of beer in most of Europe. And the Dutch, who are famous for their liberal laws on marijuana, smoke less than the European average.
Really?
Leading us to continue to believe that use will not go up when marijuana is legalized.
And in the state of Washington, you were instrumental in getting their similar laws passed. Well, first I was going to ask, you know, have you seen that change there with the use of marijuana smoking? Right. And yeah, secondly, what do you intend to do here in Oregon?
Yeah, I worked very hard in Washington State, and 2 years ago it was a little dicier than it is now because we were groundbreaking on that. And, you know, I was just in our mayor, Jay Inslee, who's our governor, is a friend of mine, and I was just at his mansion there in Olympia, and we were just enjoying an afternoon and talking. And I'll tell you, he was not involved in this whole marijuana thing, but suddenly he's the governor, and we're the first state along with Colorado legalized, and it's in his lap. 2 years later, he is so thankful that we are arresting 5,000 people less this year. 5,000 people who would have been arrested in our state did not get arrested in our state because we passed IPOLIPO 2 years ago. We have taken the money out of organized crime. Marijuana was a cash crop rivaling apples in Washington State. And today we are well on the way to making this not a black market industry, but a regulated industry that employs people, that is taxed. And now, instead of enriching and empowering gangs and organized crime, we've got businesses that are paying lots of taxes. And every year our state is going to be getting hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue. Oregon's Measure 91 is a little lighter on the taxation because they want to make sure that marijuana is not more expensive legally than it is on the black market, so we can snuff out the black market. But even with that, Oregon's going to be generating tens of millions of dollars a year, and this will be earmarked for drug education, drug treatment, health programs, and law enforcement issues. We'll be able to study marijuana better and better control safety issues on the road, on and on. There's just so many reasons to say yes for Measure 91 here in Oregon.
Definitely. As we come to the close of our interview, are there any other points that or a specific issue that you want our listeners to take away and our voters to take away from this conversation that we haven't discussed?
Well, first of all, I'd remind you that there's a lot of people that make money because marijuana is illegal. I call them the PPP, the pot prohibition profiteers. They can be to the left, people who think marijuana should not be regulated, and they can be to the right, people who think we should lock up pot smokers. But all of them, I find, or not all of them, but just a lot of them are motivated not by what they think is right, but what they think is going to be good for their bottom line. And I think people in Oregon need to look at the issue carefully, remember, youth will not go up, but we'll take the crime out of the equation, we'll take the racism out of the issue, we will free up law enforcement to refocus their limited and precious resources to serious crime, and we will do great things, I think, to keep marijuana away from people under 21 and to protect safety on the road. And, you know, it is an off-year election, so for me, I think Oregonians generally understand the wisdom of Measure 91, but it is an off-year election, which makes these kind of initiatives a little more of a challenge. So if people understand the importance of this, I think they should talk it up. They can go to the Yes on Measure 91 website, and they can learn more about the issue, and they can get out their friends to vote.
Great. Thank you so much, Rick Steves, for taking time to chat with me and for supporting KBOO Community Radio.
All right. Thank you for what you're doing, and best wishes.
That was KBOO's Sarika Mehta speaking with travel guru and public broadcasting personality Rick Steves.
And this is Sam talking to you, dear listener, inviting you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio at 877-500-5266. Become part, become a member of KBOO Portland. Join up with Leslie, who renewed her membership from Rhododendron, Oregon. And join in your support of KBOO with Fire on the Mountain at 1708 East Burnside, proudly serving free-range chicken wings with 12 house-made sauces and their handcrafted ales and lagers. For more information and to find the location nearest you, you can visit portlandwings.com. And Petisco, 1411 Northeast Broadway, located in Northeast Irvington with a rotating menu serving sandwiches, dinner, and brunch. And Biwa, a Japanese izakaya-style restaurant located at 215 Southeast 9th Avenue in inner Southeast Portland. More information at biwarestaurant.com or 503-239-8830. And a different number you can call is 877-500-5266 and become an active supporting member of KBOO Community Radio, because that's what matters to you. Having a space on the on the radio dial that is committed to bringing you what you want and what you need and to reflecting your interests. 877-500-5266. You know that you cannot find a program like Rose City Native elsewhere, that only KBOO Community Radio makes a space for for this kind of perspective. And that's why you support KBOO. That's why you're going to log on to kboo.fm and use the safe, convenient, easy, and secure web form to make your fully tax-deductible 501c3